Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, award shows have officially moved to streaming. We review Netflix's Avatar, The Last Airbender. Fast and Furious is coming to an end. We have a prominent director saying, hey, dialogue doesn't matter. And our main topic this week is, what do you do when everyone loves a movie but you? Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm my fellow host, John Davenport.
Hey, buddy.
Hey, Troy Heinrichs.
Perfect balance. The world is in perfect balance once again.
You've watched too much Avatar. Way too much Avatar.
All 8 episodes. It was great.
Amanda won't be here this week. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group, The Hollywood Outsider, or we're on Twitter or X at BuyPopcorn. Really do appreciate all the sharing of the podcast, reviews, share it on social media. Anything else you can do is great. How's it going, guys? What's new?
I don't know. I didn't see the outside of the house. Did a lot of binging this weekend.
You don't normally do that much binging, do you?
I don't. I cleared the schedule and made sure I had nothing going on. So
cleared the schedule for this little bald kid.
You know it.
Now, is this like a? I never watched Avatar. Is this a remake of The Golden Child? Is that what it is?
I have the knife. Or I want the knife. Yeah.
No, it is not.
Okay. I'm just checking. I haven't seen. We're going to hear more about that in a little bit. Man, did you guys watch the... Now, it's over now, but the SAG Awards was streaming on Netflix just recently. And they had... it was complete with F-bombs. There were no commercials. Do you think it's the way to get people engaged in award shows again? I mean, they seem to be pretty gleefully dropping the F-bombs, which is fine. But my mindset is like, I grew up like watching this with my mom. I don't know if little kids want to be watching this with their parents and F-bombs are flying everywhere.
I mean, if it was like the Golden Globes where everybody's all drunk and stuff, then that might be fun.
Yeah, the SAG Awards were pretty much, they were all drunk and stuff.
Pedro Pascal was drunk for sure. He even said so.
The no commercial thing was nice, though. I mean, it just kept it going.
The only thing I didn't like is instead of commercials, like where commercials would be, they basically were interviewing the actors. I don't like that. I mean, I'd almost rather have a commercial than awkward interviews that just feel like they're going nowhere. Other than Pedro Pascal's interview, because he's just great to talk to.
It's like I don't even look for the award show itself anymore. I definitely watch for the fashion sense of the things.
What?
And I'm still, I watch the people coming in. I see who's standing by who, who's talking to who.
Ooh, what are they wearing?
Who's hanging out with who, you know? And then Margot Robbie came in and I was just like, I know the pink thing for Barbie, but it's like, did you bring your comforter with you?
It was a big dress.
Is it a robe? Like, did she like put a robe on sideways and it was tied around her waist? I couldn't understand what was going on.
It was really large. Yeah, she's trying to get that Barbie thing going.
So much material.
I appreciate it. It was interesting that after all of the strikes last year and everything else, where it was all about streaming, now the SAG Awards are literally on streaming. And I know people are kind of burned out on award shows. I mean, outside of the Oscars and the Golden Globes, I haven't really paid much attention. But I did watch the SAG Awards because it was on Netflix and I had to see what this was like. And yeah, I mean... It was fine. I don't know. It was fine.
We like the Oscars. We like the Emmys and stuff. But it's like for the general public.
People don't care.
These award shows are basically Hollywood touting Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like who cares? Like give me the People's Choice Awards or the MTV Awards where the fans actually get to like vote. Like those get viewership because it's fun because you don't know what to expect. Right? The artsy fartsy stuff. It's like. We appreciate it because we understand that every industry needs to get the awards that people deserve, but it's not broadcast material anymore.
I think part of the reason why it's not broadcast material anymore is because we've gone through a period where celebrity doesn't have the same stamp of amazingness or whatever you want to call it as it used to, where movie stars used to be movie stars and they're alluring,
captivating, yeah, mysterious.
This whole facade to them. And now not only is that nearly gone, but there are times where people get awards. It's like, who is that? And what show are they on? What's going on? Who are these people?
Too much content.
There's really just too much content going on, which is both good and bad. But also, we know so much about the lives about these stars. It's no longer about like this brief look into these stars' lives or whatever it is, or just to see something on the screen that you wouldn't normally get a chance to see, because you can see them anywhere now and you can pull it up whenever you want. And there's no need to sit there and push yourself to these shows, with the exception of maybe you're a TV fan or maybe you're a movie fan. There's no other reason to sit down and watch these than just those two reasons. And you know what? That's not enough sometimes.
I also think people are just getting, I don't want to say the world is getting too negative. I don't think that's necessarily fair. Sure, there's a lot of negativity, but just because
I think it's a States thing, but yes.
Okay. But what I think is a bigger problem is that people used to admire and want to be a movie star, and now I think people look down on the concept. You know, it's more of, well, you're elite, you're kind of arrogant, you're full of yourself, you have all this money. I think COVID changed people's perceptions of what movie stars or celebrity meant. Like, I think it used to mean something to look up to, and now people kind of look down on it. Like, yeah, no, you just think you're better than me, and what do you do? What do you do that's so much better than, you know, a nurse or someone who provides for so many other people? I don't think it's really prominent.
John's more on the right angle on this one. I think it's truly because we're so desensitized. Like, before it was like, you know, and Tom Hanks had his streak in the 90s. It's like, oh, Tom Hanks, right? The only time I get to see Tom Hanks is in the movie, maybe in a few interviews, and then at the Oscars. And you just want to hear what Tom Hanks has to say because it's Tom Hanks, right? Mm. But now I can hear Tom Hanks anytime. Like, he can just put up a TikTok and an Instagram and a reel and a short and all this other stuff. And I see Tom Hanks all over the place that I'm like, I don't need to see Tom Hanks every freaking day. So the mystique of it all, I think, is what's missing. Like, I can see these actors and celebrities 24/7 if I want to. And I just don't think that the cool factor of, ooh, it's the Oscars. Like, look at their cool outfits and stuff. Like, the mystique, it's just gone because I see it every day. I'm bombarded by it now. So I don't think it's that captivating, as John was saying.
Fair point. And their dresses apparently are ridiculous.
Oh, my God. It's a curtain literally hanging off of her. I don't understand.
They're to a point where they have to keep on pushing the envelope, you know, just to get attention or get clicks or whatnot. The Dune premiere, you had Zendaya walking around in a C-3PO costume, essentially, just to get attention. There's no other reason why she would be wearing that.
Maybe Zendaya likes whatever Zendaya likes. I don't know who Zendaya is. But
well, whatever. I can't keep up with all these different names these kids have anymore.
These kids. Okay, Grandpa. She can roll her robo suit off my lawn.
You know what? I think Anthony Daniels wore it better, honestly.
I wish he had a see-through ass. C-3PO costume. That would have been great. All right. Well, that was just interesting to talk about. I want to get to some Dune conversation in a second, but Vin Diesel did go out publicly and say Fast and Furious is going to do one more film. They've begun the process. It's going to be the finale. It's going to be one film. It sounds like there's very little doubt of that at this point. The last one did well, but it didn't do well enough to generate two more movies. So they're going to finally go out for either one last ride, or it's the end of the road, or whatever analogy you want to throw out there. I just kind of curious, do you guys think it's time? Is there any particular way you want them to end it? Anything? Do you not care anymore? Where are you at with Fast and Furious 47?
Thank God.
Pump the brakes.
I don't trust them. I don't trust them.
If it makes a billion, suddenly one more ride.
One more ride. We're getting dinosaurs finally.
Finally. That's a crossover we all want.
You had to say the tagline of the movie. Now it's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's like I'm a marketing person, and I'm just like, that's perfect. Let's do it. I don't care what the movie is. Like, just get it on a poster.
the ghost of Brian. Something weird. They'll find something. Now they're going to cross over into haunting movies. Why not?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be the last movie, and then they're like, well, let's do two. And it's like, no, like, we already said it's going to be the last one. Now we're confirming it's the last one.
Yeah, it's time. I've had a lot of fun watching these. I have a good time going to the theater every time to see them, even though they're not always good movies. But, man, end it. Go on a high note, however you want to do it. Make sure Brian's still alive, because, my God, we can't take his death again. I'm good with that.
You should have gone out at 9, because 9 definitely was a high note.
I liked Fast X.
I did not. Well,
I did. Everybody else loved it, but you. Just kidding. That's not true. A lot of people didn't like it.
No, a lot of people didn't like it. I don't know if I can say I liked it or loved it. I know I watched it.
Come on, Momoa.
Momoa is the best part of that whole thing.
I want Momoa. I want some more Momoa.
I want more of whatever that was.
Okay, I want to talk about this and we can move on. But so recently, Denis Villeneuve is the director of Dune, and he was making his rounds doing press for Dune. And he said, and this is a quote, I wish I was exaggerating. This is a direct quote. Frankly, I hate dialogue. Dialogue is for theater and television. I don't remember movies because of a good line. I remember movies because of a strong image. I'm not interested in dialogue at all. Pure image and sound. That is the power of cinema. But it is something not obvious when you watch movies today. Movies have been corrupted by television.
Clearly, he was snorting too much of that stuff that's on the planet that they're trying to collect.
Been doing a little spice, know what you're saying?
Yeah.
You know,
that's how much I care about this property that I don't remember what it's called, spice.
You read the book, didn't you?
Long time ago. Like, don't hold me to the book. It was a long time ago.
Well, I couldn't disagree with this more, because to me, you know, we've been doing this podcast for 12 years, I think, and memorable dialogue is how so many movie buffs I know communicate. Like, it's our love language. It's how we share our love of cinema. I'll be back. I literally have a poster right behind me that says, are you going to bark all day, little doggy, or are you going to bite? How many times have you met somebody who's a Clue fan, if you're a Clue fan, and you quote the whole damn, I'm going to go home and sleep with my wife. You know, that's just like randomly, like movie quote after movie quote after movie quote shares the love of film. I get visuals, pulse pounding aesthetics and sound, and a visual combination makes a great cinematic event. I don't think that's the only thing that makes a great movie. I just don't. Quentin Tarantino, for early parts of his career, made every success on dialogue.
Well, I think dialogue punches the visual. I mean, just think like Terminator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Terminator, he's just standing there in the doorway. He walks in. It's really quiet, and you're like just foreboding, and then it's the, I'll be back. You know, it's like you remember the I'll be back. You don't remember what the rest of the scene looked like. Or Shawshank Redemption, right? Get busy living or get busy dying. You can quote movies because dialogue is important in film, just as it is in television. It's not just about the cinematic experience. It's also about the dialogue between the characters and how those characters grow throughout the course of the movie.
Absolutely. If you go back and, you know, yes, obviously some of the great movies are visually stunning, Titanic and things like that. But you also, what is very often picked as one of the greatest films of all time, The Shawshank Redemption. There's nothing visual in there that stands out, except maybe when he crawls out of the sewer. You know, he crawled through all that shit. It's because of the conversation between the characters every time. Glengarry Glen Ross. What the fuck is visually interesting about Glengarry Glen Ross other than Jack Lemmon and his shitty tweed jacket?
Coffee pot.
Hey.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I love Jack Lemmon. Sorry.
I was going to say.
I didn't mean to attack
you. The visual at the end of Shawshank Redemption, when they see each other on the beach, that visual doesn't happen without the dialogue of where the frick he was going in the first place and how he got to Zewantanejo.
And their connection in the prison, like all the conversations that led to that moment where it mattered that you cared about that character. You're not going to care about these characters just strictly from visuals. You just won't. I know Dune was beloved by many. I thought it was a slog. So, and I feel like this quote comes from a place of someone that I suspect probably thinks his movie was brilliant, and many people do, but it's just because of visuals. Like, the characters weren't interesting. The dialogue was lame, to say the least. It just wasn't a riveting film to me.
Well, he's also getting the Herbert blessing, right? Because Brian,
I don't care.
But and this is the problem with the two movies. I haven't seen the second movie yet, so I can't really comment on the second movie. But the first movie was just so dreadfully boring because Brian did see the second one, and he said, "I saw Dune Part 2 at a private studio screening, and it's gratifying to see my father's story told with such great care." And it's like, yeah, it was. It was literally a great book adaptation, like almost too much like the book adaptation, which is why it's supposed to be transcribed for the screen and not tell me the book again. I could read the book, right? I want to see the visuals and do the different things. So I need more punch in order to keep me entertained for 3+ hours.
Almost 3 hours. It's not quite 3 hours. John, what do you think about this? Does this reek of elitist snobbery to you? Because it's coming across in the same vein as Martin Scorsese going around saying, you know, superhero movies aren't cinema.
You know what? I'm not going to say it's elitist. I think it's somebody who is.
I said it for you. It's okay.
All right. You can say it for me. Thanks. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. Thanks for putting words in my mouth. Anyhow, the criticism for his for the first Dune movie is hard to miss, right? The criticism of it being a slog. It was too long. It was kind of boring. There's not enough going on. All those things are kind of hard to miss. And yet his only sort of defense that he has for himself is, hey, at least I had a very pretty movie. And yeah, he'd had that. Sure. I think it's really just a defense mechanism at the moment. He did Prisoners. Prisoners has a lot of... conversation in it. Did a few other movies, also had a lot of conversation in it. So I don't see how he is honestly saying this sort of thing without going, you know what, maybe I'm just trying to make up for the fact that I didn't make the greatest of movies when it came to the first Dune movie. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt of not being so elitist or stupid.
No, but he's clearly doing the thing you do when you know you made something kind of not so great. Is that you run your mouth.
The justification, right?
Yeah, let the work stand for itself and shut up.
Right.
Just dribble? Is that what you're saying? Just dribble? Is that what you're trying to tell him?
Sure.
For a lot of people, he probably would have won more points if he said, you know what? The first movie, it came out and it was something that, you know, though beautiful, it didn't have the kind of action that got people excited. This second movie, we made up for it. If he would have said something like that, it probably would have gotten more attention.
I just want to say this to Denis. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse. You don't understand. I could have had class. I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody instead of a bum, which is what I am. Toto, I've got a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore. Here's looking at you, kid. Go ahead, make my day. On and on and on. Anybody that thinks dialogue isn't just as important as visuals, I don't know if you understand movies as much as you think you do. It really just pisses me off because... In my mind, I had this conversation, right? There's so many people that feel like their vision of cinema is more artistic than anyone who watches superhero movies or Jurassic Park or Fast and Furious movies, right? Like those kinds of escapist films. Like they're not cinema. Yeah, because they often say they're all style, no substance. Well, isn't that exactly what he's saying? Like that's all style, no substance. If you don't have dialogue, which in turn creates characters and interactions that you can get behind and have feel passion for, then you're just all style, no substance. What's the difference? Just because there's capes, that makes it different? Because it's based on a book that some people deem as cool, that makes it... Like, that's the kind of stuff that just pisses me off. It's elitist behavior. It's an elitist attitude to think your movie's better just because it's not the other thing. No, it's the same concept. If it's lacking in good dialogue, it's lacking in good dialogue. It doesn't matter like what the genre is.
Yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, it's just a TV screen with snow, right? And you have this little girl sitting in front of it going like, hey, why is the cable out? Until she turns around and says, they're here.
There you go.
And then you're like, oh, they're aliens or demons or whatever it ends up being.
I was wondering where you're going with that. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like when you were a child?
So without the line, you don't know what the hell's going on. It's just a TV.
True. Yeah, dialogue matters, man. Always matters. Interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah, I don't see how you can make connections to characters without dialogue. It doesn't work. I think that's part of the reason why the first Dune movie doesn't necessarily work 100% because I think he's relying too much on the fact that people know the story, mm-hmm. rather than making you like these characters by giving them their moments and letting the actors do their jobs. It's just like, oh, this is pretty. This is pretty. This is pretty. Here's a little bit of words that just don't matter. And this is pretty.
Barbara Harris, I think, said this best in our Facebook group. She said, because I want to give her full credit. She said it. I didn't. Silent movies went the way of the dodo bird because of talkies. So I don't understand his position on this. Yeah. Because words matter. Yeah. Words matter. Just pictures ain't going to get it done. Can you imagine if we lived in a world where it was just visuals and sound, and that's how you had to make every connection? Movies would die tomorrow. It would just be television.
Well, even they put the dialogue on the cards, right? So you'd see the picture, and then you see the picture of the dialogue. So clearly the dialogue was important because I had to insert it into the movie.
The way you knew what was going on.
Right.
Jesus.
Like if the dialogue wasn't important, you wouldn't have made dialogue cards before we were able to hear what they were actually saying.
Exactly. Let's go on to happier news. Let's talk about Avatar. But before we do that, our show isn't independently funded. Therefore, all the expenses are from our own pockets. Patreon helps fans support their favorite podcast. Once you sign up, you get immediate access to all the content in your respective tier. We have a bonus episode that's coming out where we discuss like Patreon supporters' questions and thoughts. So that's coming out soon. And now that you understand what it is, if you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. That's patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And maybe we'll be making a return to remake this movie right on there. We'll see. Maybe. You never know. So, now we're going to move into Avatar The Last Airbender, right? Troy.
Yes.
You watched this. John, did you watch this at all?
I did not.
Okay. Good. Be quiet then. So, long ago, before the blue people even existed, I'm taking this from Troy's review, the real Avatar, master of all four elements, water, earth, fire, and air, existed in the world. 20 years ago, Nickelodeon called upon a masters of story and art, and Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Canetso, to craft a television series that America, nay, the world, had never seen. One that would transcend both the physical and spiritual connection between kids and parents as they watched a bald-headed child save the world. Once again, the golden child came first, but whatever. The original Avatar universe has spawned two television series, a live-action movie that most people wish never existed, comic books, video games, and a slew of other mediums. The Avatar is the only human who can master all four elements and bring balance to the world, but 100 years ago he vanished, and in that ensuing time, the Fire Nation rampaged across the world, throwing it out of balance. 100 years later, the Avatar lives once again, and the journey about life, love, loyalty, friendship, family, and energy is about to begin another cycle. So, Troy, tell me something. As someone, myself, who knows nothing about the world of Avatar, never seen the movie, never watched an episode, what about this world is appealing? In layman's terms.
Yeah, the thing that's great about this world is that you're literally put into a place where the adults are fighting a war. They're trying to figure out, how do we survive? How does the Air Nation, the Air Nomads, survive against the Fire Nation? How does the Earth Kingdom survive against the Fire Nation? How does the Water Tribe of the North and South survive against the Fire Nation? And it's the kids who are the ones that have to basically tell the adults, hey, what's going on? Why are we doing this? Why are we fighting? Why can't we be friends? Why can't we all get along? Why can't we do something differently? And so the fact that the heroes of this story are actually children and they're trying to create their own future, it's a really great testament to all the people that today are like, what kind of world are we leaving our kids? And so it really makes this great counterposition between, yeah, adults should really sit down and watch this and pay attention, right? Because the kids might actually have something to say for the future that they want to have versus the future that we're trying to give them that we think that we want them to have. And there's a balance that has to occur there between parents and children to really listen to each other rather than do the respect my authority all the time.
Respect my authority. Okay. So this is an important question. Can I watch and never have seen anything prior? And if you tell me I need to watch this or that, that answer is no, by the way.
No, the biggest thing about this is that when the original cartoon aired, it was approximately 480 minutes of content. This version, the live action version on Netflix that just dropped, is about 430 minutes of content. So the extra 50 minutes is like, it fills it out a little bit more. It feels more lived in the world.
Is it pretty close then?
It's pretty spot on to the original. They basically take some few things from the future book two and book three, or season two and season three of the cartoon, pull it into the front so you can get introduced to some of those characters earlier. But for the most part, it's really the best parts of book one Water, and it concludes pretty much the exact same way. So if you've seen the cartoon, like, there's nothing really new to be surprised by here other than how well the casting is and how well they did the special effects for the bending and how well the world feels, and even some of the spirit world spirits that they were able to create and just feel how real those things are. Really, really impressive job by Netflix. They spared no expense with this.
How about the performances? Anybody stand out?
Oh, General Iroh. Yeah, that one from Paul Lee. Iroh is an interesting character throughout the three cartoon television series, and his relationship to his nephew, which is Prince Zuko, potential heir to the throne of the Fire Nation, the guidance he gives, you know, to Daniel Liu's character in Prince Zuko in here matches the cartoon very similar. So you get the same feels, you get the same energy, you get the same wisdom. And I think that's really great as that moves along. You get a lot of greatness between Sokka and Katara and Aang and those characters and how they play off of each other. You truly feel the brother-sister vibe, especially when Katara and Sokka are together by themselves trying to get through the spirit forest. And then when they're going through the caves in the Earth Kingdom in Omashu, and just how they navigate and how they try to figure out how to relate to each other through some of the tragedy that they've been through. And Aang is just, they nailed it with this guy. He's just so good in bringing, I think what was really great was in the cartoon, he feels more childish and he feels more spoiled and he feels more brash, but he grows and learns as he goes along. This version, it seems like, yeah, he's fun. Yes, he can be lighthearted. Yes, he can quip and all that other stuff, but he really understands the plight of the fact that he left. And because he left, all of this bad stuff happened, and the guilt that he feels for leaving, really, they played that part of it up in this version a lot more. And I really think that's great, because when you think about having to carry guilt and how you let guilt go, that's how you grow, right? You figure out, like, I, you know, this wasn't my fault. I didn't mean to do this. I just got caught up in a storm. I got sucked underwater and I disappeared, right? It's like, I didn't cause the Fire Nation to be assholes. Like, I just wasn't around to do anything to stop it. And so he tries to overcome that guilt as the rest of the season goes along until he finally saves the day towards the end of the first season.
Did you have any problem with, and granted, I don't know much about this, but apparently Sokka was very sexist early on, and people are very upset that they've toned this aspect of the character down because it was very important to his character growth. Is that something you can speak to?
It's not that I didn't find, I've never actually heard this take that the cartoon version was sexist. He's a character whose mother dies and father is gone fighting the war. So he's got nobody to help raise him, right? So at this point, he's played on the aspect of the boy who grew up too quickly, right? Now, yes, he is a little bit of like a, he's a little bit of a player in the cartoon, sure. Mm-hmm. And he definitely kisses some girls along the way in the first season of the show. Those same things happen in the live action. So like, that's not lost. I think what really is the focus of this particular live action series, though, is growth and development. I had this bad thing happen to me. How do I overcome that to be the leader I need to be to save the world? Okay. And that's the case for all four of the main characters, right? That's the same for Aang, Katara, Sokka, and Prince Zuko.
Now, how about the action and special effects? Because I'm sure they, you know, had some money with the movie, but this is Netflix money. Does it look pretty snazzy, or does it look like a TV show?
Well, I don't think they had any money from the movie at all. Maybe the studio had cash somewhere, but the movie's completely independent. We don't talk about the movie.
Okay.
I don't know what M. Night was smoking that day. It's bad. It is just bad. And it's probably the reason why it's bad. The movie's bad because the special effects are bad. The bending is bad. The bending is what makes this thing freaking awesome. It's the martial art styles between the Air Nomads fight differently than the Fire Nation, who fights differently than the Earth Kingdom, who fights differently than the Water Tribe. Right?
Oh, so they have their own specific style.
They have their own specific movements and styles. And
do they use the elements to their advantage in their fighting styles? Is that the idea?
Exactly, okay. Right. The Airbenders are very much more defense, where Fire Nation is more attack. Right, so it's definitely a matter of seeing how those
and the water play people just out. Spit on you,
essentially. Pretty much.
Okay,
and the way that you see those dance moves as they're moving around in the movie version was just pathetic because they would do huh 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 huh, and then you would see a rock float across the screen in slow motion, and it was so bad. This is very much like the cartoon, very fluid, very in line, very in motion. The way that they make the earth pillars and then chop off pieces of the earth pillar is like bullets or cannonballs coming out of a cannon kind of feel. They do that both with ice columns and with so much better than what the movie portrayed. And I think the movie stinks because the movie tries to shove 400 some minutes of content into 90 minutes, and that just doesn't work. You have to feel the world and why you're fighting for the world. That's 90% of why this world exists. And the lore from the past plays a factor into the present. And then of course the concept of the Avatar alone, like where did the Avatar come from? Why is it this one person? Why do they have to show up now? And what does the moon have to do with it? And what does a comet have to do with it? And there's all this like extra things that just build this out to be a fantastical, you know, Lord of the Rings type, or, you know, Dark Tower type, or any of those large grand adventure type stories. It really does make it very interesting to sink into the lore of the show. And there is a lot of lore in the history of what they built out. I think like Babylon 5, where they had 1,000 years of history written, even though you didn't see those 1,000 years, that history is important to the show and how they work it in this Netflix version, I think is really, really well done.
So would you say if you're someone like me, right, that didn't know anything about it, I don't need that background is what it sounds like. You know, you don't need that background. So I can come to this pretty even keel, right? It's fair. I don't show up and I feel like I'm lost before it even gets going.
No, it's totally fair. And they do a really great job introducing you to the Avatar lineage of the past Avatars and working them past Avatars into the story. I think is a great way to introduce people to the lore and getting people excited about the past. Because there are things from the past that do play a role in the present because of that. And I think that this does a really great job of getting people up to speed of what happened between Zuko and his dad, what happened between General Iroh and his brother. Like all of that stuff that's happened off screen in the last 100 years, you get bits and pieces where it matters in the story of the present as it goes along. So you don't have to know any of that backstory at all.
And so is this everything you wanted? Because you've been looking forward to this for a long time.
I mean, I sat on my couch for 8 hours straight. I binged the whole thing in one sitting.
One sitting? You didn't pee?
Yeah. No, I got up once, I think, to pee around episode 5, or at the end of episode 4, because episode 4 had all the feels. okay. Needed a break. Yeah.
Good. I'm glad you didn't just have a bucket handy, because that would have been very uncomfortable.
I mean, What I tend to do with things like this, where it's like a reboot or a remake or remaster, it's like, I know where the story's going. I know what's going to happen. I know the beats. I know where it's going to land. And yet at the end of episode 4, at the end of episode 5, at the end of episode 8, I'm like, I got the feels. Like, why am I crying? I know how this is going to end. Like, why am I all like verklempt right now? And so I think because of that, it definitely hit the mark for me.
I have a question I just formulated, because over the weekend, I couldn't help but notice that there's a lot of people talking about how disappointed they are with this show. You know, for example, I just pulled up a couple of reviews. Variety says a beautifully crafted disappointment. TV Guide says this Netflix remake is an insult to everyone involved. Collider says struggles with time constraints due to the shorter season and loses out on the depth of the original show. Can you see, one, why they would say such things about the show? And then two, it's a two-part question, so I'm sorry, because it sounds like you like this show a lot. What would you tell somebody to both acknowledge what people are saying about it and why they are possibly overstating themselves?
I think it's a matter of figuring out if you've seen the cartoon or not seen the cartoon. I've seen reviews where people have seen the cartoon and said, this is not my cartoon, get off my lawn, blah, 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 blah. I've seen some people like me who are like, you know what? Like, it's never going to be the same experience. We've experienced it once. Like, we lived with these characters. We lived with the cartoon. It was a different time when we saw that. It was 2005. It's 20 years ago. You know, the whole world is different 20 years ago. We don't even have the iPhone 20 years ago. Like, there's just a difference about what you remembered from what you saw 20 years ago and today. And I think what this does is it definitely gives people that have grown up with the lore a live action version that's pretty close to the original. And it gives new people that are coming in that don't want to watch cartoons, like Aaron, you know, guilty, he doesn't like animation, right? So now it's, it gives Aaron an ability.
I don't like animation. It's just not my preferred style.
You know, but this gives Aaron an ability to jump in and actually get to understand the everything we're talking about with the cartoon. There's definitely some pieces that are missing that really give you the, you know, but there's also great moments like in Amashu, where you hit all of the funny beats. And I, every time I heard a funny beat, I was like, yes, I'm so glad that was in there. That's so good. And whether people laugh at it or not that haven't seen it previously, I think that's the big question. I have not run into anybody yet that has just watched this cold with no backstory, no information. So I'm waiting for a friend of mine to actually jump in and do that so that I can then have a conversation that would be more like, okay, did you like it? Did you not like it? What didn't you like about it? What threw you, so that we can understand what people might be seeing without the rose-colored glasses of people that have seen it before.
Well, I'm going to check it out. You've actually sold me, believe it or not. And it takes a lot to sell me. I really didn't care about this at all.
It is a great world-building thing. And if it works as well as it does and more people watch it, there's a lot of places this could go for Netflix. There's a whole other TV show called The Legend of Korra, which happens 75 years after the ending of this show. There's also all of the avatars of the past that you can dip into and tell those stories. There's just so much content in the universe that we can get some really cool things out of it, which I'm looking forward to.
So, final score. If $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix?
8 episodes, 1 point for each. Solid $8.
Okay, fair point. All right. Before we move on, anything anybody wants to talk about that you've watched recently that you want to pimp out there? Special mentions or anything?
No, I've actually hit a period where I've been just catching up on shows. Like, I've been really appreciating Murder at the End of the World. That one is you guys are right. That one's right up my alley.
Yeah, there you go. Good. Death and Other Details is pretty good too. If you haven't seen that,
it's really good.
Yeah, that's another one I got to check out.
And I'm hearing good things about Constellation. I'm about halfway through the first episode, and so far looks like Apple TV is going to have another hit on that one.
Yeah, I'm paying attention to that one too.
That's like the Sci-Fi Channel at this point, isn't it?
I'm not mad at it.
Well, I am. I'm just telling you, as somebody that doesn't love sci-fi as much as you guys, but every time I click on it, I'm like, Yeah, pass.
They have other stuff besides sci-fi on Apple TV Plus. It's just the sci-fi show, stuff they do is really,
about
really good.
Soccer.
Yeah,
well, I've heard good things.
Okay,
about
Ted Lasso. Aside from that, what else they got exactly?
There's another show about psychologist or a therapist.
Shrinking, sure.
Shrinking.
Like his life is prize. Like that one is a.
Okay, it's not fair to ask you guys. Literally, it's the only channel you guys watch anymore. So other than Troy, just ventured into Netflix, but I'm sure you just binged it because you probably only paid for 1 month so you could see this one season.
I actually had a 7-day free trial.
Shit.
Oh, I did watch last night as we're recording this, the premiere of Walking Dead, the ones that live, just premiered. It's the Rick and Michonne show, and it actually is really, really, really good.
How don't they care.
Dove into it.
And, I care. I want to see it.
And they do a really great job in this first episode to actually tie together the kids' version of Walking Dead. The name is escaping me. That takes place inside of Omaha, Nebraska.
World Beyond or something like that.
Yeah, World Beyond. Yeah, something like that. And then the Fear of the Walking Dead, which takes place in Los Angeles. They tie in like a lot of the lore of the Walking Dead into this one episode in a really neat way. So if you are a big Walking Dead fan, I would highly recommend picking this one up. I think it's going to be really cool, especially what they do with the Rick and Michonne stories specifically.
Okay.
And for those that don't know, Rick obviously disappeared after the bridge
no surprises
blew up in season 9. And then Michonne is out looking for Rick because he was taken by a helicopter.
Spoilers so, much?
I mean, that happened a couple, several years ago.
Several years ago.
Like many, many years.
Fair enough.
Two lovers trying to find each other across the wilderness, basically, is what it is.
I will recommend Red Right Hand if you haven't seen it yet. It's out on demand right now. We just had an interview with Esham and Ian Nelms. They directed this one. It's got Orlando Bloom as Cash, and Annie McDowell is a badass in it. She's playing totally against type. Listen to the interview. It's actually a really, really interesting interview. And these guys did Fat Man. If you didn't see that one, it was, you know, Violent Night before Violent Night. It's the, it's basically, you know, Violent Night was like a remake of it. So I definitely recommend that movie. It was worth watching. And I also, I'm embargoed. I can't talk about it much, but there's a movie coming out called In the Land of Saints and Sinners with Liam Neeson. All I'm saying, best Liam Neeson movie in years. Like a really great movie.
Does he hop over a fence?
No, he's too tired.
We all love true crime and the movies they inspire, but have you ever wondered how true that story actually is? Welcome to Inspired by a True Story, where every 2 weeks our award-winning podcast hosts and film critics discuss the genuine details that have inspired some of the most memorable true crime movies around. Each episode will break down the crime or crimes that inspired a very specific film and then discuss how factual that film is versus how much is simply Hollywood magic. Inspired by a True Story is now available to listen and subscribe on your favorite podcast app, or you can always find episodes at inspiredbyatruestory.com. As fans, we all deserve to know how true our true crime is, so take a listen to Inspired by a True Story and let's keep those artists honest.
All right, our topic this week is what do you do when it seems like everybody loves a movie but you? Because we've all loved a movie others didn't like, right? That happens. But what happens when it's the other way around? Like Dune, some people absolutely adore it. They'll rave about it. And the sequel's out, and we're going to hear more raves about it. And I didn't like the first one at all when it debuted. Troy didn't either. But when it seems like everybody else is raving about it, like, what do you do when this happens? Do you ever revisit it later, I guess is my question.
You know, for me, I would have to say that, yeah, when I get hit like this, it is something that I'll turn around and try to revisit later, because I'll assume that maybe it was the wrong night for me to see something. Maybe I was just not in the right mood. Maybe I didn't go to the right movie theater. Maybe I wasn't comfortable. Who knows? I'll give it another chance, especially if everyone seems to love it. But I do have to say that most often than not, I usually stick to my guns on whether or not I like something.
I gotta be honest, man. I know a lot of people claim that, right? It's your mood, and sure, it can affect, especially if it's a comedy. I think it really can affect it. I very rarely think my mood, I'm good at compartmentalizing. Maybe that's it. But my
mood, you're a sociopath.
Yeah, that can be it too. But I can't remember the last time I felt differently about a movie when I rewatched it. Like, very rarely does it happen. I'm not saying it's never happened, but it's very, very rare. And Dune's not one I'm willing to revisit. Like, I'm just not. It's kind of like The Green Knight for me. I'm like, no, you made me suffer enough the first time. I'm not doing this again.
I do have to say that Dune's one of those movies that I do put on now if I want to take a nap.
Is it really? Are you serious? Yeah.
No, I'm serious. I'll put it up on either version, either the old school one or this one. I'll put it up because like the old school one puts me to sleep because of all the whispering. And then this one, just because nothing really happens in it. So I just decided if I'm going to take a nap, it's either that or I'll put on episodes 1 through 3. I'll put those on. That's Star Wars for those who don't understand what I'm talking about. Or any Harry Potter. Now, Harry Potter is just because I like Harry Potter. But that's what I do when I want to go to sleep.
Okay.
And I think I would actually revisit the first Dune. I know the first time I watched it, I had to watch it like in 3 different sittings because I was just, it was later in the day and I'm just like, I gotta watch this thing. But I definitely watched it in 3 1-hour parts rather than just enjoying the experience for the whole 3 hours.
Okay, well, that's a problem. So you're a problem, so, Troy.
Well, no, the length of the movie is a problem, and the fact that it's, you know, I had to keep like, you know, a fan by your bike because it was so like dusty and sandy in my office.
Do you think this is
and it's the music in that one? It's the brrr.
This is a legitimate question for you because you're a very specific audience kind of person. You're a very specific audience because you and a couple people I know are like you, but very, I don't know many people that are like you that watch their stuff at 1.5 speed or 2x speed, don't you think that affects your ability to enjoy something at a normal speed?
No, because it's not that I'm watching it at 1.5 or 2x speed.
You are,
though. Well, I'm not doing it because I'm bored or because I want to get it done faster. I'm doing it because there are certain mediums like audiobooks where you get used to the speech patterns of people. And as you get used to the speech patterns of people, you can actually understand them when they're talking about the speed because...
Man, this is feeling really deep.
You just, your brain is just... And I think it comes from like when we were taught how to speed read as kids. Because what? there's a whole Evelyn Wood program or whatever that we went through where they taught you how to speed read, right? So it's like when you can hear the important words and you can hear the cadence of someone's dialogue, you can listen faster and still retain information. Now, when you're doing it for movies, it's a little bit different, right? A show like Survivor, like you could watch that at 1.5x, right? You don't need to sit there and like be engrossed by it. But something like Dune, I mean, it probably would benefit from a 1.5x or 2x speed, but at the same time, it is there for the visual and you're okay watching it that way. I think my challenge with Dune specifically was just like, okay, I got to remember all these characters and all these names and all these places. It's been so long since I've read the book. Like I'm like taking notes as I'm going through. If I got to take notes and I'm not actually reviewing the thing, like the general public is not going to follow along with this. And I think that was the problem with the first movie is it's just so much information you have to understand to enjoy the second movie.
Well, I don't want to make this all about Dune. I'm just I want to keep it more broad.
But versus like Rebel Moon, right? Rebel Moon introduced us to a completely new world and character arcs, and that's in two different parts. I had no problem following Rebel Moon at all. Like, make it that simple. Like, it wasn't that difficult.
You know, I got to be honest, Trey. I had no problem following Dune. I understood everything that was happening. I just didn't care.
Yeah, I'm same thing. Like we mentioned it earlier. I think that has more to do with the fact that there was too much visuals and not enough like character development. Yeah,
it was long shots of people walking around mm-hmm, and dust flying. Mm-hmm. Boy, that dust. Do you think mood or your company ever plays into your enjoyment? And when I say that, I really, like I said, mood doesn't really affect me. But when it comes to comedies, who I see something with can affect how much I enjoy it.
Because there's definitely like certain comedies that are at a point where if you're with somebody that likes raunchy comedies, you'll actually probably laugh along with them more if you saw the raunchy comedy yourself, because maybe raunchy comedies aren't your thing. But I think you adapt to the people that you're with as you're watching a particular
product. Well, and I also think if other people are laughing, it makes for a more enjoyable experience. Now, if you go with somebody, and let's say you're somebody that's into raunchy, like you like a good sex comedy or something, and you go and see No Hard Feelings, right? You go see that sex comedy with somebody who's kind of, I don't want to say a prude, but they don't like fun. So you're sitting with them and all they're doing is judging everything on the screen, and you, like, that's hard to enjoy it at the same level as if you go with somebody who also appreciates the same kind of comedy. That can suck the fun out of it.
That's the same with everything, though. Like, if you surround yourself with negative people, it's going to feel kind of
sure.
Like,
I think it's more directly affected, for me anyway, in comedies. I think more in drama, I'm not really paying attention to what the other people are doing. I really don't care. I'm just engrossed in the movie or the action scenes, whatever kind of movie it is, or a thriller. But if it's a comedy, I really care about personal engagement, like the people I'm with. Like, that can affect me to some degree.
That affects me a lot too. I'm typically the guy that everyone wants to go see a comedy with, because when there's a big laugh in there, I'm the problem in the movie theater, laughing my ass off and uncontrollably about ready to fall out of my seat with my uncommon laugh. Like I'm usually that person, and it's a lot of fun to sit there and be that person. And not only that, but also be with your friends and everyone's just like, bumping into each other and doing the whole laughing along, and everyone smacking each other's legs because it's so damn funny. Like, all those things are just a great moments that I really appreciate, that I miss a lot about the good comedies that used to come out. I remember a group of friends, we all went to go see Role Models, and that movie was so funny that like we were quoting it for weeks. We were quoting that movie. We had so much fun with it.
That was a fun movie. So do you ever feel like everyone else is just wrong, or that it just wasn't for you? Because I remember seeing Green Knight, one of the very few movies I've ever walked out on. I just did not give a shit. And so many people like praised it and raved about it. And I just, I'm like, okay, you know, it's just not for me then. Like, it just wasn't for me.
I've gotten to a point, especially since doing this show, where I try not to do something where I feel like everyone's wrong. I just feel like, hey, it's not for me. I don't want to be that person that sits there and says that, you know, well, you're just a terrible person for liking that movie and you should feel ashamed of yourself. Like, I don't want to be that way, and I don't want to have anything to do with the sentence that makes people feel that way. And so I do the best I can to be like, oh, well, I'm glad you really enjoyed it. It's didn't land with me the same way, and I'm really sorry, but that's just that's it.
Look, I'm 420 supportive. The people that like the Green Knight clearly got the message that you had to be high in order to go into that movie before you started watching it. Since I don't partake in that stuff, like, I'm with Aaron. Like, it just was not good. Like, no, I don't even think I made it as long as Aaron did, to be honest, before I walked out.
So do you feel like it's a problem with everybody else, or it's just not for you?
Oh, no, that one is just...
No, not that's just, in general.
People can like what they like, but I mean, at the end of the day, if it's a bad movie, it's a bad movie.
That's what I say. All right, so let's see if we can give some shockers here. Be honest, though. Don't, you know, genuine surprises, if there is a surprise. Give three films that you feel this way about. Movies that seem universally beloved that you just do not like for whatever reason. Doesn't mean you hate it. It just means you don't like it. You don't understand what people love about it. Troy, you go first.
I'm going to attack the Bird Box on Netflix with Sandra Bullock,
where she's walking around blind the entire movie.
Well, the Quiet Place ripoff. They have to be blind outside because if they see whatever they're supposed to see, they end up dying. And I thought for the first hour or so, it was actually really creative how they were able to do the get to the grocery store and use the car's GPS in order to navigate back home and turn at the appropriate spots. And I could buy into the concepts of all of that. As the movie goes along and they have to leave and escape into the forest and jump in a canoe and go down this, like, how the hell do you know where you are? Like, and then they're going running through the forest and it's like, how the hell do you not run into a tree? Like, there was some believability in the beginning, and the believability just got worse and worse and worse as the movie went along. So I can't say it was a good movie because it started out really great and had a cool concept. And I was like, I was bought in, and then they go to this magic sanctuary where apparently they can just walk around without having to have blindfolds on, and the birds are alive. And I'm like, okay, I understand where Bird Box comes from now.
And that was like, I think that's one of Netflix's biggest movies of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not good.
Huge.
I wasn't a fan either. I remember watching that going, this is ridiculous. Most of this is ridiculous. At least The Quiet Place I understood. That one, it didn't make sense to me. I guess maybe they could be angels. I don't know.
I don't know. Machine Gun Kelly being as adored as he was in that movie and being anyone other than Machine Gun Kelly, I don't understand.
He was good in that Motley Crue movie, The Dirt.
Oh, yeah, he was in that, wasn't he?
He was pretty good in that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a fan of his. I admire that Eminem made him switch musical genres, but outside of that, not a fan of his.
Yeah, I'm with you.
What about you, Jeff?
So my first one is one that I have very strong feelings about, and that's Avatar, James Cameron's Avatar.
Okay.
The first one.
The very first one. And not the Avatar with the bald kid or anything else like that. Not the Golden Child remake.
Not the real Avatar.
Just Avatar.
And pretty offended, by the way, diversity speaking, that Eddie Murphy wasn't part of this, but whatever.
Right. Absolutely. So I remember this very clearly. I was coming back into town on a plane, and we had just landed, and I get a whole bunch of texts all of a sudden by my big group of friends that we went to the movies with all the time. And everyone's like, hey, we went to go see Avatar. It was really great. Da, 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 da. I was disappointed because all these people were like, went to go see it. They couldn't wait for one more night for us to be back in town. And they just like were then decided to tell us how wonderful and great this movie was. And everybody in the group was like, this is an amazing movie. It's so good. And I went to go see it. And it was just okay. I didn't see anything that blew my mind. I thought the flying scenes were done better in How to Train Your Dragon, and the Guardians of Ga'Hoole, that owl, the animation.
Wow, that's a nice pull. Good for you, John.
Yeah, thank you. Those two movies had a much bigger feeling when it came to the whole flying aspects and how incredible that is, and it really puts you in the seat of being in the air with the creatures and whatnot. Whereas Avatar just did not do the same thing. It didn't have the same sort of feel. I didn't really care about the story because it was very much Fern Gully. And I, not that I don't like Fern Gully, but I want them to be more honest about it when they're like, hey, we're going to remake Fern Gully, as opposed to saying something like this. You know, there's just so many things about it that I just couldn't get into. And that's why Avatar is my first pick.
Did you see it in IMAX 3D when you saw it?
No.
Did you see it in 2D?
I did.
I wonder if that played into it.
I saw it because... in 3D and wasn't that impressed either. I thought the effects were impressive. The movie's just okay. Like, it's just not a great movie.
Like I said, the two other movies I mentioned, the Guardians of Ga'Hoole and the How to Train Your Dragon, I might have seen both of those in 3D. Either way, those they still handle the flight aspects so much better.
Yeah, I remember the AWA seeds in the IMAX 3D, because right in the IMAX theater, you're sitting much closer to the screen than you are in, say, like a
Troy,
AMC Prime or something.
You're not going to get me to be on your side on this.
No. I'm just wondering if because I vividly remember.
I'm not doing this, Troy.
Feeling like the AWA seeds were like coming off my shoulder, and I was like immersed in it. So I remember actually crying when Home Tree falls in the movie when I watched it in IMAX. And then when I watched it again, like on
Avatar,
like, I did.
What a!
I'm an
Troy. You're a wonderful, sweet, sweet soul, and but you're
that's
wrong.
Ridiculous.
But then I was like, this movie's so great. Let's watch it in my office, right on my TV, and it sucked. It was so bad. So I don't know if it was like that experience, like, you know, when Nolan's like, watch the 70mm version of Dunkirk. Like, it's filmed that way for a reason. I think you had to see this in IMAX 3D. Otherwise, it feels very flat otherwise. Like, I think John's
absolutely
right. I have a
really important question for you. Yeah. At the time, were you craving chocolate?
No.
Okay.
All right. Mine is 2001's A Space Odyssey. That's my first one. I do not enjoy
what
that
do you
film.
Mean, Aaron?
Oh, God. I just don't like anything. You want to talk about a movie that's all style and no substance. Like, it's visually stunning. Got it. I don't even like the opening scene. That, you know, the iconic scene. I think Barbie did it better. That's all I'm saying.
Except she wasn't in a box.
I don't care.
It would have been better if she was in the box.
I don't care. I don't care about this movie. I can't stand this movie. Stanley Kubrick, I think, is overrated as shit. Like, he can do visuals, but he can't create characters that are lasting to save his life. Maybe A Clockwork Orange, I'll give you. But otherwise, everything he does is over the top, it's campy, and it's more reliant on visuals than it is anything of actual, tangible substance. And 2001 A Space Odyssey is definitely at the top of that list. And I've had, God, I remember being in film class, and I was told by the teacher that this is art. And I said, no, this is shit. This is a terrible movie. I don't care how pretty the pictures are if I don't care about the story. And I didn't care. I was bored, senseless. My senses weren't entertained. I wasn't engaged. I understand that it's visually appealing. Great. Like I was talking about earlier, dialogue does matter. And I am fine with some silent films. You can make a great film that's reliant solely on visuals, where the visuals really carry a big portion of the piece. I just don't think that's one of those movies. I do not like it in any way, shape, or form.
You know, the most interesting character in that movie is the goddamn computer that has no personality.
Absolutely. And it has, ironically, has the most personality. God.
I really love when I said the, what do you mean, Aaron? Yeah. You got pissed. Uh-huh. You were just like, oh, here we go.
My brother is a big fan of Kubrick, and I love my brother. My brother is, you know, we share some similar film interests, but he has a lot of artistic tastes, and I understand that, and I respect that. We just don't see eye to eye on that. And he and I, he probably don't even remember this. We had a long conversation about Kubrick many, many, many years ago. And, you know, I understand why he appeals to so many people. It's just, I just did not subscribe to the same theories. You know, I just don't believe his films are as artistic as many other ones do. So I'm definitely in a class, I'm in the minority, so to speak. And I'm okay with that because I've tried. I've rewatched them. I've tried so hard to understand. Like, I loathe The Shining. Loathe it. That, to be fair, is more to do with I love that book. And that movie is nothing like the book. And I just can't stand Jack Nicholson's approach to that role. It's so campy. It's not anything grounded in reality. And the movie is very important to be, or the book is very important to be grounded in reality. And 2001 is very similar in that respect. So I feel like it's just, I mean, even that opening scene, it's iconic, right? It's iconic. Everybody knows that scene, whether you've seen that movie or not, you kind of know the opening scene, the evolution of mankind and whatnot, and how simple we are. That isn't even great, but it's iconic. It stood the test of time. What do I know? I'm just not a fan.
I think Airplane 2 did it better.
I'm telling you, I think Barbie did it better. Troy, what's your number two?
My number two is going to probably get me canceled, which seems to be a pattern lately on the show. Blade Runner. I mean,
not here. Not a fan.
I get that it's supposed to be that the humans are dicks and that the replicants are actually better than the humans. And I get that it's a sci-fi noir. I get all that stuff. It's just, it's so dark. And the rain. Oh my God, the rain. It's so annoying. It just rains. And like every time they come out with another version of it, it's to sell more DVDs or sell more Blu-rays or sell more digital and just add one more minute so I can re-release it on something.
50 seconds more narration. Yay.
It gets worse every time it gets re-released. I think the best version they had was the one where actually Harrison Ford narrates along like what's actually happening, which I know that the director and Harrison Ford absolutely hate. But again, it's one of these things where it's so convoluted that the general movie watcher is just going like, bah? And I think the narrative version helps that along so that people can understand what the hell is actually happening. But it's just, even the acting isn't really, it's not Harrison Ford's best performance by any stretch of the imagination. It's just very blah. Maybe that's what they were supposed to go with because they're trying to show the humans versus the replicants concepts, but it is just not fun to watch. Honestly, Blade Runner and Blade Runner, or whatever the new one is, 2049.
Oh my God.
Ugh. Yeah. Like these are the most perfect examples to Dune.
Like, well, one of them was the same director.
So. Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. One of them was the same director. And that one, all I remember is like, roar! Why is the music doing that? Roar! I can't hear what's happening. Stupid music.
All I remember is Ana de Armas on a billboard.
Well,
that part was great.
I forgive him for that.
I just said that part was great. That part was great.
Yeah. The original Blade Runner never got into it.
I think that's fair, man. Like, I know it's a cult classic and whatnot. I just don't get the appeal. Narration or no narration. It's just kind of drawn out. I think Rutger Hauer gives an amazing performance. I do.
Yeah.
I will find the positive in that. I think his final scene with Harrison Ford is beautiful. But as a whole, I don't find the movie that engaging. I have that problem with a lot of Ridley Scott films where he in many ways is very concurrent with Kubrick, where he's more focused on the visual appeal and less on the character dynamics. And Blade Runner, I think, is one of them. Now, visually, I think it's a cool world. Like, I do think it's very cool visual aesthetic. Dark or no dark, you know, I just think it's a cool world. All right, John, what's your next one?
This one's going to get me a lot of heat because a lot of people absolutely love this movie. And it's not one that sits very high on the scale. And even the director is somebody that I appreciate, but I just don't. This is not one of his particularly best jobs for me. And that's Inception.
You shut your mouth.
Is it because you don't know if that top is spinning at the end and it still pisses you off?
I don't care if the top is spinning, because like every single part of the movie, it's like I don't like this whole idea of, oh, we got to go deeper. Oh, we got to go deeper now. We got to go deeper still. And then they have to do this whole layer, and it just, you can't trust anything at any point. And I don't like things that have unreliable narrators, because like that, you're trying to tell me a story. Don't make me leave the story going, what is happening? I don't know. There's just so much that goes with it. I think it's a little too heady for its own good, which does happen with Christopher Nolan's movie. This one went a little bit too far for me. But it's just, I don't appreciate it. I don't fault anyone for loving the movie. It's just not one that fit for me.
Speaking of convoluted, I love when he came out recently and said Tenet wasn't made to be completely understood. And I'm like, that's somebody who realized, oh shit, that was way too confusing for people.
Like, no, that was someone who said, I made a not so great movie and I opened my mouth.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is I love Tenet.
I love Tenet. I thought Tenet was great.
Tenet was very good. Yeah, I didn't love it.
My issue with Tenet was just that every time somebody said something you needed to understand, there was loud music or an airplane or they're wearing a mask.
I'm a little tired of that trend in movies.
Back to Inception. No, you're wrong about that. That's a fantastic movie.
I think John's just mad he didn't come up with the art styles concepts that were brought up for that movie. I think that's what.
See, that's one where there are some memorable visuals, but I will say, while the top is definitely something that stood the test of time, people still remember that. The rotating rooms, you know, I love that so much of his memorable effects are done via practical effects. I think that that's something that. I appreciate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah. And no, DiCaprio was amazing in that movie. So
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great things to that movie. It's just that it's not a movie for me that has ever been like, oh, I need to sit down and watch it again, or I love the whole aspect of it. Sure. No, it's because it's the whole unreliable narrator thing to it. It's just like Marvel's, you know, with Marvel with the timelines and all that other bullshit in the different worlds. I can't believe what's going on because they can just make up the rules as they go. I'm out.
Sure. I get that. I mean, even if I don't agree about that particular movie, I understand that logic. It's the problem with the multiverse, right? So my next one, we're not supposed to talk about it, but we're gonna, and it's Fight Club. I don't care about Fight Club. I just don't. I think the
punch you in the face.
I think the twist is overrated. I don't think it's nearly as cool as the world seems to think it is. You know, it's cool the first time you see it, I guess, but I wasn't blown away by it. I thought Helena Bonham Carter's kind of over the top, and Edward Norton's never as good except in Prime Fear as he thinks he is. Brad Pitt's given it his all, so I'll give it to him. But overall, Fight Club, I've seen it two or three times, and I've never thought it was very good. I've just said, it's okay. I don't dislike it. I don't hate it. I don't poo-poo it. I kind of get what people seem to like about it, but I just find it to be kind of, it's a watch checker for me. As I'm watching it, I'm checking my watch, waiting for it to end.
My problem with Fight Club is that it's what it's become in the zeitgeist of people, where it's become this whole other thing. And usually the kind of people who really dig Fight Club, to me, I mean, this might be a little bit too derogatory of a way to put
there's
it.
There's a lot of film fans that love that movie. So
I know there's a lot of film fans out there. Well, I mean, okay, let's go as broad but pointed as, like, it's the people who think Joe Rogan's too awesome for words. Like, those people are usually the ones who are like, Fight Club is such a great movie. I see myself so much in it. Okay,
I don't agree with that. I really don't. I know a lot of people that love Fight Club that are just, they just love cinema. My brother, I guarantee you, ain't listening to Joe Rogan, and he likes Fight Club. Friend of the show, Scott Clark, definitely not a fan of that. And he's a huge Fight Club fan. So, I mean, I don't think that's a fair assumption. I get what you're saying, but I don't think that's a fair assumption.
Okay, fine. Be that way about it. I'm just going to be over here and be wrong.
Trey, do you like Fight Club?
It's not one of my all-time favorite movies, but the first time I watched it, hell yeah, dude. I was like, that's great. That was awesome. Okay. Screw the corporations. Blow up the buildings. Amen.
Maybe it's my taste, you know?
I agree with Helena Bonham Carter. I don't think her role was super awesome, but for the most part, I dug the movie, right? I really did. Now it's become, I think what John's saying, like, because it's all the time, like, rule number one, rule number two. It's like, well, it's so overused now that it's kind of lost its cool factor.
One other point, dialogue matters.
Dialogue absolutely matters.
There you go. Everybody knows the rule. Even if they've never seen the movie, they know that rule. All right, last
I'm pretty point. Sure we don't talk about that, though.
No, we don't. Right.
This one I brought up in the past. I figured it was just great to put it here because I know it'll get me even more canceled from this episode. But, Temple of Doom, it just...
I feel like you already made this case, but you're going to make it again.
What?
Yeah, I just shit on my
is
childhood.
Actually happening.
Yeah, go ahead and shit on my childhood with your wrongness.
I just find it incredibly slow and boring. Like, I feel...
You just feel a need to bring it up every chance you get. Just rub it in.
I feel... Indiana Jones.
Didn't they just win like a recent battle royale? Like, so something. You're definitely in the minority on that one.
Yes. And that was the point of the topic. I stayed on topic. the thing that I think makes Indiana Jones, Indiana Jones is that he's finding things, archaeology things that he is preventing other world powers from getting their hands on. That's Indiana Jones to me.
Literally happens in that movie.
Some dude that wants to drink blood and rip out hearts in the middle of a cave and some
children.
Mountains in the corner of a world.
And enslave children.
It's not affecting the world. It's affecting this one small little village in this one small corner of the
Did
thing.
Did you hear that,
it's
John? Not, kids don't matter. That's what I heard.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yep.
It just isn't grand enough for what Indy is to me. Indy's bigger than a small village.
Yeah. I mean, doesn't it take place in Indy? India, and it's Indiana
takes place
Jones.
In India, and this there's a whole lot of child trafficking happening.
Yeah, it's the sound of Indiana Jones's freedom.
Mm-hmm. The hills are alive with the sound of freedom.
Well, that one, I enjoy your wrongness. That's all I can say about it.
I don't like Indy going dark. I think it's weird. Whatever he's drinking or doing or spitting,
that'd be blood.
Yeah,
that was blood. For sure.
It's like 5 seconds of the movie.
I don't know why you don't like children, but whatever. John, what's your next one?
All right, so this is my final one of this whole ordeal. This is another one that's going to catch me a lot of heat because I know that there's lot of...
You guys keep saying... He's like Scott Clark of the olden years. Like, this is controversial. You don't know until it comes out if it's controversial, until people
that's
start
true.
Writing in.
All right, anyhow, The Big Lebowski... I have tried so many times to love this movie. I have tried to sit there and be like, all right, everyone loves this movie. Everyone's constantly quoting this movie. The rug really does tie everything into the room pretty well. You know, I don't roll on Sabbath. All these things, I can't do it with this movie, man. I don't know if it's the pot smoking or the incessant need to have a white Russian in your hand at any given time of the day. I don't know if it's the making jokes about bowling. Like, I don't know which one it is, but there's something about this movie that just doesn't sit right with me. I appreciate my friends who love this movie because I know a lot of people love this movie. There was one time I had a Halloween party where three couples showed up as the Big Lebowski and the Valkyrie. You know, it's people's favorite movie for some reason or another. But yeah, this one doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, shut the fuck up, Donnie. The dude abides. That's all I'm going to say. I dig that movie. I do.
I think it's a great movie because it's just its job is to basically show you that the dude doesn't care. Right. He remains true to what he is. It's not a story of change. It's about a story of just existing and being like, you know, F this noise. Like, I'm just going to be who I am, man.
Exactly, man. Exactly.
No.
All right. Well, my last one, I was going to catch a lot of heat for it. It's very controversial. I don't like The Godfather. I don't.
What?
I don't like The Godfather. I should preface, I don't like mobster movies that much. Goodfellas is an exception. There you go, Scorsese. I threw you a bone. See, I like some of your stuff. I didn't like The Godfather.
Like he never gets a bone.
Yeah. I mean, he's doing fine. He's going to be all right. They gave him $200 million to make a movie that should have been made with 40, but whatever. Yeah. I'm not a fan of that whole trilogy of, you know, the first one in particular, I think the performances are all strong and it's a fine enough movie for what it is, but there are people that have it on this, you know, I don't know, Mount Everest of films, and it's just not there for me. I think it's a fine film. It's fine. I don't dislike it. I have no ill will toward it. I just don't really care about it.
I mean, I agree with 2 and 3. I mean, really? I don't know.
Yeah, not a fan. Don't like it.
I'm mostly with you. I'm not really into the mobster movies. It's a very few movies that I will watch of that genre and be like, all right, that was a good time. And that's not one of them.
Oh, good. Then I'm not alone. But there are people, like when I was in my film class, that would tell me how I can't appreciate cinema. You got poor taste. Like, I just don't like The Godfather, man. I don't think that really makes me have poor taste. It just means I don't like The Godfather for several reasons. I think it's overwrought. It's a little too ham-fisted. The acting's a bit over the top. And it's just, you know, I just didn't, the subject matter kind of droned on after a while. There's a couple cool things, you know, horse's head in the bed. That's a pretty cool surprise. But outside of that, eh. Oh, James Caan. James Caan is a cool ass son of a bitch. So there's that. All right. Now we're going to go to the listener vault. Basically, we put this topic on Facebook and said, you know, name a movie that feels like everybody loves, but you're just not a fan of. And we got a lot of suggestions. So we're going to each take kind of three and go through them, maybe discuss as we go. So do your three at your turn.
All right. So Deb Thomas says, oh boy, here it goes. Lord of the Rings. I enjoy sci-fi-y. I dress up for Ren Faire, and I've played tabletop RPGs. I almost put that all in the wrong order. Lord of the Rings just doesn't get me engaged enough to care. I appreciate this comment because I call those movies walking the movie because that's really a lot of what I remember from those movies. It's also like a bad friendship throughout the entire movie series, so I don't really dig on
how
that
How do
either.
You figure? That Sam was the most loyal friend ever. Now, maybe the other side of that friendship isn't so great.
But exactly.
Sam's end is fantastic. Feels like a good representation of a marriage to me. It's like one of you is always carrying the other one up the mountain.
That's probably true, too.
Yeah, Frodo was just all, Sam's all like, you know, you might not be able to carry it, but I can carry you. And you're just like, oh, I want a friend like Sam.
No,
I am Sam.
I love those movies on the same... And the other side of that coin, I can completely see why other people would not like them. But I feel like, you know, it's one of those things where I read the books as a kid. So I love that they brought that world to life, blah, 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 blah. I get why you don't like it, though. I don't think that's, I mean, I do think it's definitely one of those movies where most of the world loves them and you're in the minority for sure. But I at least understand where you're coming from.
Just appreciates 12 hours of time. You know,
yeah, she's got things
spent
to do
differently.
Yeah, she's got things. Well, you know what? I got to say, this is also on my list of things that I put on when I want to take a nap.
Jeez. Well, watch the extended versions. You might nap more.
Just so.
Right. Oh, yeah. I get some good sleep with these. All right. So Michael Weinrich says, my brother wouldn't stop raving about Tropic Thunder. He just kept going on and on. You got to see this movie. It's the funniest movie ever. By the time I finally saw it, my expectations were too high. I tried watching it again, but it just doesn't seem to do anything for me. Michael, you're wrong. I'm sorry, buddy. You're wrong. This movie is amazing. It's funny because the story I told about Avatar, right? That group of friends, they went and saw Avatar. We finally got to go see it. It just didn't do much anything for me. But then on the flip side, we went to go see Tropic Thunder, fell in love with the movie and how hysterical it was, told everybody else they need to go see it. When they finally went to go see it, they were like, it was just okay. I don't understand what the thing about. And that's, they were wrong also. But yeah, I get it. I'm sorry, buddy.
I feel like if you're in love with the filmmaking process and, you know, the behind the scenes of filmmaking, I think that movie probably hits you a lot harder than Joe Public. So just because a lot of the jokes really connect to just actors and directing and, you know, a lot of that elitist mindset in many respects. So I don't know. And Tom Cruise's character is what just happened.
Yeah. So. That was the movie that brought Tom Cruise back to me.
That was good. And ludicrous for some reason.
Yeah.
All right. Third one.
Let's see. Darcy Beardsley says, everyone I know loves Step Brothers. I just don't get the Will Ferrell hype. Darcy, again, I got to point out how, like, I'm really sorry that that movie doesn't connect with you, but this is one of those movies that is just hysterical. It is just...
Darcy, I'm on your side. Yeah, I'm on your side.
Hysterical? No.
I don't find that movie funny.
Occasionally funny, haha, here and there.
No.
What I don't get is, like, Talladega Nights. I love Talladega Nights.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I can't stand this movie. I don't like Step Brothers.
I don't. I don't understand the words you're saying.
There's Will Ferrell where he acts, and then there's Will Ferrell where he's just over the top. And this is the Will Ferrell over the top versus Talladega Nights. It was like acted over the top.
That's not over the top to you?
Well, sometimes when he's in Barbie.
Go ahead, back your ass up over your own point.
Yeah,
it didn't make any sense.
He's just not good in Barbie, but in Spirited he's okay. You know, and
I'm just saying Ricky Bobby, he's more over the top than he is in Step Brothers.
But it's like it's acted that way. It's supposed to be that way. Like Step Brothers, it just feels like he's trying too hard. You know, is what it is. It's not acted the right way.
I just feel like it's the same character he's played in like 15 different movies, and at some point the joke stops being funny. And to me, that joke just wasn't funny. Now a lot of people I'm definitely Darcy, we're in the minority on that one, because yeah, most people love that movie. I'm just not on board with it.
Yeah, I love that movie. I don't know if I've seen it again since I saw it in the theater, but I remember that whole experience was one of those great times where we're laughing. I can barely breathe at some moments. It was a good time.
All right, Troy, what are your three?
All right. Well, Nate Bruce is no longer my friend because Nate Bruce does not like Napoleon Dynamite.
I don't either.
Tried to watch it multiple times, but never enjoyed it and don't get the fascination of it at all.
With him 100%.
Nate Bruce, go eat your damn dinner, okay? The movie's classic, and it put Jamiroquai on the map.
What?
Put Jamiroquai on the map? They were on the map before that movie ever came out.
What?
Jamiroquai wasn't on the map. Jamiroquai was, if you were in the know about Jamiroquai, you knew
they
about
They had a popular song before then.
They had a popular song if you were in certain circles. It wasn't like
on the radio. The circles were
on
the radio.
It was on MTV MTV made videos.
I spun the disc. It wasn't as popular as it could have been. It got more popular with Napoleon Dynamite.
Don't you ever say that phrase ever again. I spun the disc? What?
I spun the disc when it came out and dropped for the very first time. I played it. One of the first people to play it on the radio.
Troy, stop, man. Just stop. No, don't do it.
It was such a great tune, and it just did not get the reach that it needed to until this movie came out.
That is what? Just it's true. Not true.
It's true.
It's not. Oh my god,
we talked about it for many 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 music meetings at the station.
It may be the best song of the 90s. That's just when I Google it right away.
Because of Napoleon
it was on
Dynamite.
Billboard for like a long ass time or some shit. Yeah, it was good. It was a hit. Before Napoleon Dynamite. Why would you even think it was Napoleon Dynamite? That was play. It was in there because of the time frame it came out. Sometimes, boy.
Sometimes, in certain circles, you didn't hear Jamiroquai. That's all I'm saying.
Okay, well, I guess I didn't spin the discs.
I know.
All right, DJ Jazzy Troy, go ahead. What's your second one?
Second one we're gonna go with is Becky Trumbo. Becky Trumbo says the Blair Witch Project. I didn't think it was scary, and didn't think it looked as real as the people around me. Have watched it a few times over the years, and I still just don't see it. A friend at my first viewing said it was real footage, but we had waited at the theater to see it next to a display, and it didn't add up.
Hmm.
I don't care if it's real or not real, but when you see the corner of that house and the kid standing in the corner, you're just like, what?
I still love that
Terrified.
Movie. I've rewatched it multiple times, so.
Terrified.
I don't think I've ever rewatched the movie, but I do love that watching of the first experience. And I love lately there's a theory going around how the movie was just a setup to kill Heather. It was the two guys setting her up to kill her.
Oh, that would be an interesting.
That would be an interesting twist.
Remake. Yeah. Do a remake. There you go.
Yeah.
Where's that in? Okay. Did you have another one or no?
Then I had Josh Stima.
Oh, I remember what his is.
Josh Stima says, Ferris Bueller's Day Off
what?
Is the biggest flaming piece of shite
what?
I have ever watched. I hate every second of it and have watched it multiple times to see what I'm missing. Would rather marathon U Bowl's entire catalog.
Wow. Yeah, you got a problem, man.
You'd rather watch Uwe Boll than Ferris Bueller's Day Off? I mean, that just sounds like you're a masochist.
Yeah. There's better things to do with your time than Uwe Boll.
It's Uwe. It's you. Uwe Boll.
Uwe Boll.
That's what it is. I love Ferris Bueller's Day Off, man. I was a truant as a kid. He was a legend to me. I looked up to him.
The real question, Josh, is did you watch this 9 times?
Oh, bravo. Bravo.
I got that joke. Okay. Mine from listeners, Jennifer Miller, she says 1993's Philadelphia. I remember everyone in the theater was an emotional mess. I didn't care for the movie. I decided to give it some time. I didn't think I was in the right headspace when I saw it. Honestly, I hadn't lived enough life to truly appreciate the movie. But years later, I watched it on HBO and I was an emotional mess. I'm glad I gave it another viewing. I find most movies where I have such a drastically different opinion comes down to I didn't watch it in the right headspace. For Philadelphia, I needed to live a little more life and take a few knocks before I truly connected with the film. Now, I don't necessarily agree 100%. Like, I think that's everybody's different in that respect in terms of the headspace situation. But mm-hmm. I really respect that, you know, Jennifer came back to it. And just to give it another chance. I'm a big fan of giving a movie another chance just to see, especially if it's like, I didn't hate it. I just, you know, didn't get what everybody else was raving about. So I come back to it at a later point just to see if that changes. I respect being open to being wrong, so to speak.
I brought it up when I was talking about it because it has happened to me. And I just know for a fact that's happened. I just don't remember which movies where I've gone back to it to be like, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was. Or that wasn't, you know, I don't remember them, but I know it's happened before.
Christy Flores is speaking to my heart. Okay. So I hadn't even heard of The Princess Bride until the mid 2010-ish. And when I watched it, I simply didn't understand why everyone and their mamas loved this movie. I waited a few years, tried again, and then again. So it's okay. Some parts are funny, but I decided I just needed to, quote unquote, be there. Yeah. And she also says, same can be said for A Christmas Story and The Nightmare Before Christmas. I've really tried. These are just cult classics that aren't for me. But Princess Bride, I've literally rewatched 4 times, still don't like it.
What's this? You've stabbed me in the heart. What's this? I don't know where to start.
Oh, God. This is inconceivable. Choice. Yeah.
I mean, the other two movies that she talked about, I'm with her on, but I'm not with her with Princess Bride. That one I do love.
Clearly, she made this comment to the pain.
Lastly, Mark Andrew. I've always tried to give universally acclaimed films a second chance because your personal mood at a given time can affect your enjoyment of a film. I think it depends on the person. For example, I watched Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse a second chance while it was in theaters. I personally have an aversion to animated films, so ultimately it didn't work for me. And plus, it ultimately gave me a headache both times, given the amount of stuff happening. But I can see why people like it. It's certainly unlike any other animated film. And to that, I just kind of want to speak to, yeah, I think a lot of times if you take the time, you can appreciate why other people loved it, even if it wasn't for you. And I think it's important to try to note that. Like sometimes I think it's just a bad movie and I don't get what people are talking about. But it can also very much just be, you know what, I just personally don't like it, but I get why other people love it. It's like The Godfather. I get why other people love it, just not for me, you know? 2001, don't get why other people love it. I really don't. I mean, I kind of get it. It's visually appealing, blah, 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 blah. But there's no substance there. And, you know, I appreciate that Mark is also given a movie another chance because of all the praise. Oh, wait, there was one more thing I wanted to mention. Karen, that would be my mother. She commented on this thread and she said The Shining and A Christmas Story because She gets me. Yeah. God bless her.
Mama P, I agree with you on The Shining. Christmas Story is a classic.
Classic piece of shit. Freaking hate that
movie. Drink more Ovaltine, Aaron. Drink more Ovaltine.
I hate that movie. God, I hate it. I remember when TBS would have that thing on 24 hours a day, and I would be pissed because I at the time you had to go up on your channels, you know, like you couldn't just like put in the number or whatever. You had to keep going up on the channel thing. And I had to pass it. Just seeing that one shot for 2 seconds or whatever it took to get to the next channel pissed me off. That's how much I hate that movie. Not a fan. All right. Well, that's a good conversation, guys. And that's going to do it for this episode. So thanks, everybody, for listening. Remember, you can go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have plenty of reviews on there. There's a new interview with directors of Red Right Hand on the podcast feed. Be sure to check out our new podcast, Inspired by a True Story. We just did the Amityville Horror. That's a pretty fascinating case, and I think a really good episode. Great. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of back and forth on are ghosts real or not real. And, you know, Amanda feels very, very specific on this. So it's definitely worth checking out. Inspired by a True Story. And Troy, you just said you were on a Star Trek podcast. Do you want to mention that?
We did. So it's a podcast that's basically going through a bunch of sci-fi stuff and reviewing essential sci-fi. And they're going through some movies. It's called Intergalactic: Reviewing Essential Sci-Fi. And on that one, it'll be coming up on there shortly, as we talked about Star Trek First Contact. Very cool. One of the best, if not the best, Star Trek movie.
For a second there, I almost broke out in the Beastie Boys.
Why?
Intergalactic?
Oh, Jesus. Never mind. All right. I'm done. We're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. I'm going to go and not watch A Christmas Story because the movie is shit. Remember, the next time you head to a theater and or stream comfortably on your couch, please don't watch any of the movies we talked about because, you know, we obviously know better. They're bad. Buy popcorn, too, because we obviously know better, and you're wrong. That's what I should have said.
You just did.